So passions, things did full circle. You persisted because you believe. So when you were young, did you believe in anything wholeheartedly that you no longer believe in now?
That is a good question. Yes, when I first went into this, I had a very strong hippie ethic of, why would I even go into this? But capitalism is bad. I was a teacher and I was like, you know, making money is probably bad. Capitalism is bad. Succeeding in business is probably bad. And I had that pretty strong conviction. And it came out in strange ways. And in fact, I think it was probably at the core of any lasting disagreement I had with my father, which I did. He felt, and this was, I think, a generational thing. I think what happened in the 1960s was there was a wholesale disregarding of everything that came before. And there were many things that needed to be disregarded. For instance, the women's movement, race equality, gay liberation, mass media, college being available to more people. All these things were, that's why the 60s happened, because all these confluences were stirred up in a big broth with mass media and drugs and other things, and it created an explosion of youth culture unlike anything that's ever been seen, largely or partially misguided, partially beautiful and really guided, but partially terribly misguided and not thinking about the future. So what was the point I was making?
You believed when you were young, but no longer.
Your question was what did I believe wholeheartedly that I do no longer believe? Mm. And that is a vague and difficult thing that I just described. It is a gestalt, a mindset that was prevalent in the 1960s that I grew up in, and it was kind of an anti-establishment, anti-everything that isn't what, it's a very egotistical point of view. Everything that isn't youth and me, I'm anti. Which is why ultimately all those movements in the 60s, the Vietnam, well, I guess that the Vietnam protest did change things, but the people didn't. The people ended up going back and to being just what they said they weren't going to be, which that was unfortunate, but probably inevitable. So I had an immature mindset that the world was black and white and that there was one way to be and that there was a right and wrong way to be. And I didn't understand the nuance of you can fit into society and be part of our capitalist society and hold on to your ideals, which you demonstrate through your everyday interaction with people, with the financial system, with charity, with all the things that are part of my life, and that you strike a balance within the society that you live in that allows you to feel okay about what you do. So, as to whether that was something I wholeheartedly believed in, that I no longer believe in, it's not exactly that. It's something that I had a very vague and immature view of that has become far more refined and nuanced as I've gotten older. And I now understand there is a good and conscious way to be a capitalist and a business owner, and there is a not good and conscious way of being. So I guess that I would pinpoint. In terms of other things that I did believe in that I don't, I mean, with the arrogance of youth, I believed I wouldn't get old and die. I fully believe that now. I never believed in any religion. I had no religious upbringing. So a big part of human myth-making and what I consider to be human frailty and misunderstanding, which is the Judeo-Christian tradition, is absent from my life. So I feel sublimely lucky about that. In addition, I feel sublimely lucky that I had a wonderful mother and a very interesting father who gave me some very good tools with which to go. So there were not a lot of things that I had to, I guess it's that I go back to that day. The thing that I believed in fully, I guess, was that you could hang out, that you could get through life being cool and hanging out, and that that was a goal in and of itself. And I started to recognize that within myself, my internal dialogue was such that it did not agree with that. Because when I would talk to myself, it would say, no, there has to be something bigger that when you're a little older, you can look back at and say, I did this. I wrote this book. I created this store. I wrote this song. I did this for charity. I was a doctor and helped these people. I was a teacher. I did something that matters in some way. And I, you know, so I guess that the thing that I believed was that I didn't know that that was a thing. And the process of my maturing has been the recognition of that thing, that there's, well, I mean, you know, the cliche is, and I reference that those LSD experiences were important. And what I got from those was that, you know, the cliche is, why am I here? What is my purpose on this world? And that's what, I mean, doing that particular substance and looking in the mirror and thinking is a profound experience for a young man, or can be, or it can be. I never looked at it as partying. For me, it was pretty close to religion. It was this very heavy philosophical, spiritual thing done in a non-frivolous atmosphere, at least in the beginning. And I would read a lot of philosophy. And so, you know, it was that process of maturing. I guess that's the thing that has been the page turner for me, is recognizing that there is a purpose to my life other than just self-gratification and
hanging out,
and that there is something worth getting up and working hard for.
So what would you say, so generally speaking, advice to people who don't know what that is, how can you jumpstart that? Or how, I mean, it's one thing to be really focused on it and really try and think and make yourself crazy about what is that? What is my purpose? And other, I find that people sometimes stumble on that. Like, it's never the people who are really focused on it and trying to figure it out. It's the people who just kind of do something accidentally. Or
yeah. Boy, it wouldn't that be the million-dollar pill. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's clear in my mind, it starts with the burning passion for something. It starts with something you genuinely love, whatever that thing is. And I think another hobby and interest of mine is cooking. And I think every great chef says, writing also, and every author says, I started with my loving literature and cooked. It started with my discovering, you know, this one pastry at this place. And I was like, oh my God, I got to figure out how they did that. And for me, it was cliche again, but seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, I was like, this is everything. Youth, excitement, that sound is in my heart and I have to be part of this. So the thing first, finding the thing you love. And it can't be something, it can't be something I don't know how to put this, but entirely selfish. You can't.
It starts out that way, right?
It may. Well, it's not thinking. It starts out. Passion starts out just not thinking. But you don't want to take the easy way out. And I think the easy way out for a lot of people might be, I'll be a porn star. something ridiculous. Something, or yeah, I'll kill people for the money. Or, you know, they think, you know, when lazy people start thinking, well, what can I do? It's like, well, what would really be fun? Don't do that. Think about what you're actually, what in your quiet moments. And for me, when I do that, I think of myself as a young person sitting in my bedroom, reading and listening to music. It's those things. It's literature and music that really turned me on.
And I also think that people, even if they have that and they understand what their passion is, maybe they try too hard to turn it into a career.
Yeah, which I did. Well, I did, but I did it in a way that didn't seem that fun. I did it teaching first because I loved, you know, I was like, well, this makes sense. So in a way, it's interesting. I mean, if I look at all my jobs, I worked in a bakery. All my jobs were kind of somehow trying to get myself into one of my passions. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, that's it.
And you can get stuck in that for a lifetime, right? Trying to figure that out.
Well, I think a lot of people never get to that. And we talked about this earlier. I think a lot of people never get to phase one, which is determining what that passion is and actually nurturing it. You know, and this is another thing, and this is way down the road, but once you have done it and success in business, there's no bullshit. You have to, if you proclaim yourself an expert in music, you better actually be one. You better have actually done the homework. And it's the same with a plumber or anything else. If you're claiming to know something, I think it's incredibly important to actually know it.
And that's what I call authenticity.
Yes, and I don't know that this is something you can proclaim for yourself. I've been told by other people I have this. Or yeah, the other day someone said, well, you seem to be comfortable in your own skin. I am genuinely a fan of music, and whether I was making my living at it or not, not a fan, an uber fan, treating it like an academic subject. Hi, Louie. You know, it's an avocation and a vocation and an education. It's a three shuns. Every part of me is it. My thought process, even my physical being, the way I breathe and move my body, I think is informed by music.
So you're not opposed to people taking a passion and trying to turn it into a moneymaker?
No, that's what your question was. Figure out what that thing is. Figure out what that thing is. Then...
Because that could dilute the passion. I mean, that could...
Well,
you deal like teaching, you know, you get into it.
Yes, you may take. You may go down the wrong road,
right.
Even though you're on the right map.
Right.
You may go down the wrong road. It's like, well, I thought I was. Yeah, well, I mean, there's no easy answers in life, and nobody, you, me, everybody, we've all had numerous. I mean, I went down that road and many roads, and it's the same as relationships or anything else. There's no very few people. You know, you occasionally meet people who are like, oh, I met my husband in eighth grade and we're still, you know, that's rare. That's rare. You have to try different things. And so I did have this passion. I nurtured it in some pretty significant ways, academically, intellectually. And then once I passed through that doorway, or what we talked about, where I kind of developed a sense of my own internal voice and how to talk to myself and motivate myself. And nobody can do that for you. It has to come from you. It has to come from some combination of desire and fear. And it was exactly those things with me, fear of failure and desire to self-actualize. And so you have the thing, that's the raw, that's the heart of it. you build a body around it, which is your resolve, and then you start doing. I don't kid myself that I have been incredibly lucky, and there's a whole world of the ways that I'm lucky, starting with, as we talked about earlier, Jill, having a partner who understands the other side of it. And then there is having a receptive community, which was Denver and the Denver music community. And then finding people like you and like other employees who, and having the ability to get something from them without standing on them and making them hate their life. That's hard too, being a sensitive boss. And I don't, you know, that's something I've worked on too, is trying to be a, in all ways, a better person all the time. And that, you know, that's part of it too. Part of it is having a goal. And if we're talking about, if we're talking about employment, there's having a goal. But then there's, if we're talking about being a human being, an actualized human being, there's that. And that's a different thing. But they have to somehow combine in you. And if I think about how I got to where I am, that's a big part of it. It's that internal dialogue and having some drive. And I really do see a goal for myself, which is I don't want to be on my deathbed and say, I didn't do anything.
Right.
I didn't create anything. I didn't. My dad, when he died, was still totally unhappy with his accomplishments, but he published 14 books and was a never finished high school and became a professor emeritus at a prestigious university. You know, I remember saying, I was like, Dad, you did everything. What more could you want? But it's human nature to not feel satisfied. So that's something else I would say is another one of my keys to being me and being successful is all along the way I've been able to say, well, I've done okay and I'm not a total failure. And here's something else. If you want some advice about living life in a constructive way, if you find yourself saying, I'm bored, ever, but if you find yourself saying it frequently, go back to the beginning, to that thing that you're trying to find. I'm never bored, ever, ever. Not for, unless I'm sick. When I'm sick and bedridden, sometimes I get bored.
Yeah.
Other than that, I am never, in the last 25 years, I cannot think. It's when I'm under, when I'm forced to do things that aren't my decision. If I'm forced to go on a vacation I don't want to go on, or sit in a meeting.
Then you're just bored out of spite.
Pretty much. or if I'm, you know me well, or if I'm in a meeting with a banker or industry people or something that is not my doing.
Yeah.
I get bored. And that's where I guess that goes back to employment and finding the thing. You know, if you are, if you find yourself in your early 30s in a job with golden handcuffs where you're making enough money to live, but it does not fulfill you in any way, you have to probably take some sort of inventory of your boredom factor. And if you are bored,
yeah, but most people, the money and the lifestyle trumps that.
Yeah. Well, for me, teaching was not very lucrative, and I was so, and I had very, my family was not wealthy, so we didn't have money growing up. I mean, we were lower middle class, but, you know, there wasn't a lot of money, and money does not, it's not money. That's not the thing. Money does not motivate in me. Maybe that's,
but you could see how people get trapped in a corporate job, because I can't imagine making
less. I would
less.
Glibly suggest I did not have money for most of my life, but I guess I would glibly suggest, as somebody who has some money now, or at least isn't worried about it as much as I used to be, stop thinking about money as much as you can.
I agree.
Stop thinking.
But it's impossible. I talk to so many people who are unhappy. They know why they're unhappy, but they can't change because they can't spend less, or they can't afford their more, you know, and the mind always goes to, I'm going to be
sick. It's like when you're sick or you have a boo-boo, an ache. Stop thinking about it.
Yes.
Stop getting into the negative. And that's what people do.
Yeah.
They think about, you know, money is.
And they watch TV and the commercials that keep up.
Well, yeah, watching TV and anything other than a bitterly acid, cynical way is a big mistake. And I watch it, but I watch it in a very conscious way where I'm incredibly cynical about everything. So I would highly suggest that if you do find yourself watching a lot of television or social media, that you start getting a very grown-up acid view towards things. And by acid, I mean bitter, mature, cynical,
realistic
view. Everyone on television is trying to sell you some bullshit lie, and that is for sure.
So let's just talk one last thing about fear. I kind of see, you know, like a typical road, and instead of trees, you have fears. And I think for most people, those fears keep them on that road. And so they can't change. They can't change directions. They can't. So have you had in your life any one fear that you've kind of had to fight with to be able to move to the next road or to change or to flow?
Well, I can pinpoint two things that I think could be helpful to people. One would be, as I was getting into the business, Twist and Shout, I was still my parents' son. And somewhere in there, in the first 5 years of the business, my parents moved back to New York. My dad decided he wanted to, we were from New York, and he wanted to give it one more shot while his health was, you know, while he was able to. And that, my parents leaving town, and for other people would be leaving the town where you grew up. That was a very formative and important thing for me. And I didn't even realize it as much until later. Suddenly being out of the show, not that I was a mama's boy, but I ran throughout my life, I ran all major decisions by my parents, or I used them as a sounding board. Mm-hmm. And they were very good parents and gave me a lot of good, safe advice. Mm-hmm. They were very safe people, and they were very reluctant to take chances in anything. So them leaving, and they moved back to New York for 3 or 5 years, right at the beginning of my career. So that breather allowed me to establish my relationship with my wife and actualize as an adult. I actually stopped being my parents' son, and I started being the man. I started being the patriarch, the husband, the parent, the boss. I went from being the son of Cy Epstein to being, and here's a great illustration of it. We went, after a number of years, when I started finally getting some success and being known, we went to a fairly prominent restaurant for my dad's birthday, and we're all standing there, and it was a restaurant I went to frequently, and the maitre d' comes over and says, "Ah, Mr. Epstein, nice to see you," and sticks out his hand to me. And my dad literally gives me the elbow, knocks me out of the way, and takes his hand. Because I told this story at his memorial. Because it was funny. It was very funny. But it made me understand that in that period when he went away, he left the patriarch of the family and with two sons kind of under his, you know, his second, and he came back where his son My brother was a partner in a very prestigious law firm, and I was the owner of this store and a married man with two stepkids and a house. So
you were kind of forced to
yeah. Separate. So that separation from parents physically signaled and created the maturity process to separate from them emotionally.
And the second fear?
The second event or kind of thing, inciting event in my life was after we had moved back here to this house, and I had recognized that I had started to emotionally get better because I was back in Denver and this, even though, you know, my dad died in that period and other things were going on. But I started to slowly think about my own physical health. And on my 51st, 2 days before my 51st birthday, a case of wine came in the mail that Jill had ordered for my birthday, my favorite wine. And I had just opened that, pulled one out. I was like, I'm going to drink this baby right now. And my doctor's office called and said, oh, we just got your blood results back. We're going to put you on this medication and that two medications for blood pressure and pre-diabetes.
Wow.
Oh, shit. 10 minutes later, she calls back. Oh, and another one for something else. I can't even remember what now. The three. It was blood pressure, blood sugar,
cholesterol,
and cholesterol or something. I don't know what. I forget what. But it was like the trifecta of middle-aged man woes, you know? So I put the bottle back in, and that moment, that was for almost 5 years ago, I said, okay, that's it. I am turning my health around, and I did. Again, great thanks to my wife who helped with the diet side of it. At the same time, interestingly, and this is some people might find this interesting, I ruptured a disc in my back. So and this was like the next month, and this changed my life profoundly and my ability to exercise. So I dealt with both of these things at the exact same time. I dealt with dealing with a completely diminished ability to physically exercise at the same time, changing my diet and lifestyle completely, and yet I managed to lose about 60 pounds in 6 months and have kept it off for about 5 years and plan on doing it for the rest of my life. It's a complete commitment to me.
It's a lifestyle change.
It is.
So the thing that keeps people maybe it's fine. Maybe people hanging out is fine because at certain points you'll have a wake up call, and if you take it seriously,
as we said,
or you may ignore it.
As we said, everybody, there's a vast majority of people who are born and go through life and die and don't think about anything. Could I have been happier? Could I have been healthier? Could I have been contributed more to our society or been a better person, husband, wife?
But they might think those, but just feel hopeless to do anything about
external things like
divorce or
media,
depression.
Church, health concerns, biochemical things.
Yeah.
All these things fuck people up and prevent them from thinking clearly about themselves.
Totally.
They were the media and
What you said about your parents, that was interesting because I saw a bumper sticker a while ago about be careful how you talk to your kids because it'll become their inner voice.
Wow.
So did you have any of that? Like your parents, you said there was a separation that helped you, but how did you not walk into that with that inner voice of the safe protection?
I did. I had to fight it because my parents were the most depression era parents, and they were both from immigrant. My mom was actually born in Russia, and you know, my dad's parents were fresh off the boat, and you know, so I'm really first generation of the family that was an American and I don't know how you get that internally. I don't know how one gets there.
Yeah.
There are certain things that really are not A plus B equals C.
Right.
They are the crazy confluence of nature and nurture that each one of us experiences. How your parents were, the genes you got, and then what life put, what meat grinder, the New York public schools, the Denver public schools, college,
government,
the everything, what it puts you, what line, you know, the sausage that you come out the other end. I used to always say to my students, we are walking along a thin strip of land, and there's a stream on either side, good and bad, and every one of you knows which one is which, and you choose to dive in.
Mm-hmm.
You choose which one you're going to dive into. We all have an internal sense, here's something else that may have changed about me. I'm not sure I believe that anymore. I do believe the meat grinder. That we have that internal clockwork of knowing. I, as a young person, I really believe everybody, it's, you know, to me, good and bad was like blue and red. It's like, this shirt is red, right? And we just had that controversy on the internet with the blue and gold dress. But, you know, it's like, we all know that, you know, smacking you is bad. Right? We can all agree that that's bad. But then I've started to learn, because of the sausage we all are, not everybody understands that.
Yeah.
Some people actually think, because of the way their parents treated them or whatever, that hitting is good. And it's the only way you get things from people. So maybe that is a way I've changed, in that I started to have a little bit more multifaceted understanding of the nature of good and bad and what the point of life is. I feel sublimely lucky that I have the internal tools, that I'm on the right path in the first place, that the goal for me is, how can I make a positive impact? And so I guess what I was saying is, you're asking me this very nice question, is how do people get better? To me, the bigger question is, how do we stop them from getting worse, especially in the light of all these terrible mass shootings and all this stuff that's happening?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how do we heal people? You know, it's one thing, and our society is like, you're either normal, you're either a mass shooter, or you're Michael Jordan. And this is a very unrealistic thing for kids to have to live up to. That's, you know, most kids have a very unrealistic idea of what growing up and succeeding even means.
Yeah.
I certainly did. I had no idea what it meant. I thought it meant getting my parents off my back, you know. And it was at some level. And then it was only once I had done that, by becoming a successful teacher, that I started to have self, that I was like, what do I really want to do? Do I want to really have something to do with music? Mm-hmm. And then once I got there, it was such a burn. I was like, this is what I really want to do. So the answer to your question is, how do you get there? Is you find that thing, you learn to have the internal voice to speak to yourself and to motivate yourself.
To ignore
the bad and shed off the bad. And you are such an amazing example of someone who had things to over, like most of them, you know, example of someone who had to overcome things and actualize as a person. And you're someone who's amazed me, your ability to do that. And so you have the thing that you love. You've found the voice to talk to yourself and motivate yourself. And then there is the getting off your ass and doing it.
And I would add to that, maybe, is to be quiet. Do you know what I mean? Like you wonder how people can be so bad. I think it's because they just never turn the volume down, and the noise of the world is so loud and disruptive and confusing.
That could mean two things too. One, the actual thing, quiet. And that is, I mean, to me, quiet may involve music, but it is contemplation away from others,
right?
Other voices. And then there is the societal quiet of just turn off the naysayers. I remember reading an interview with Neil Young where he said, you know, ultimately in my journey, and this, he may have said this in one of his books, which I highly recommend, especially the first one, if you want to learn about self-actualization. He said he had some revelation at some point early in his career where he realized even my manager, even my bandmates, even the label, nobody is going to believe in my art as much as me, and I have to make the final decisions, and I have to be my greatest advocate. Same with me. Mm. It's so true. It's so true as a businessman, as a parent, as a husband, as everything. If you don't believe in yourself, if you are find yourself saying things like, oh, the Lord will straighten this out, or the law will straighten this
or
out.
This pill.
Or this pill will straighten this out. God, what a mistake that is. Mm. You are incorrect. For me, the doctors were saying, no, no, you'll take these for the rest of your life. And I was like, no, 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 no.
Anything else you want to add? Yeah,
I mean, the keys to being me, it sounds terrible, but I really love something. I'm not afraid to make a decision. I've made a lot of them and stuck with them. And at this age of 56, which I realize isn't that old, but it's older than many people, I have had the understanding and the ability to recognize that I must change, that you must, to get better, to succeed, to do anything, you must not become rigid in your thinking, and you must quiet the external voices unless you really find out that you're stupid or you believe I can't make decisions. You're one of these people like, I cannot
have the belief.
Then do find someone to believe in, I guess, and listen to them, but that's flawed. You really need to do this for yourself.
Take control
of your own life. Develop the skills. Don't be a bullshitter. Learn to read, learn to write, learn to think. The thing I got best from my dad was, and this again sounds bad, but he was this, to be the smartest guy in the room, or at least one of the smarter guys in the room, is a very valuable thing. To not be trying to catch up with what's being said, and to be at the front end of the conversation instead of the back end of it, in all situations, which is something I always try to do. I don't go into any situation where I have absolutely no idea what's happening. And this is the truth. This is something else. I said I was lazy. I actually wasn't. But I considered lazy was a pathological intake of information. And I've been doing this my entire life through books, magazines, television, the internet, music, conversation. I've taken in. And we just got through saying it's nice to have some quiet. I've spent more quiet time in the last few years. I guess I spent quiet time, but it's taking in information is a full-time and necessary function. If you want to not be a bullshitter, you have to know stuff. And that's been my greatest asset, is learning about stuff and being able to talk to people about almost any subject without being in the dark. I hate being in the dark. And I recommend this to all people. Don't be in the dark about stuff. Try to learn. If you're going to talk to a doctor about some specific thing, get a book or get on the internet and learn something about it before you go talk to them. So you're not like, you know, try to learn. And it's the same with everything. And it's just like when we bought that business, you know, it was like, okay, let's think about how this is going to go. So the intellectual process is important.
The filter. I mean, if you're going to take in all that information, you've got to be able to know what's what.
Yes, and I take for granted everything.
Yeah.
But I was given by my parents all sorts of tools to think critically about the world around me, and that is lucky. So think critically about the world around you, folks.
Take in information, but be critical.
Yeah, don't believe any of it, but take it all in.
The longer we talk, the more we're undoing the
that is really the case, though, and that's one of those classic, like, LSD conundrums. It's like, I have to know everything, but it's all worthless.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. No wonder we're so confused and mental.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
Well, thank you for giving us the keys to your engine.
Well, sure. Maybe we got somewhere. I scratched the surface, but I've had a really good life. A lot of people talk to me and say, it looks like you've had a good life because I smile a lot and appear to be happy. So
how do you pay that forward?
I do it every day. When I said I'm going to have the best record store in the world, it wasn't for me. It was for the world. That's how I pay it forward, by having this great store that takes care of its employees, that has nurtured our community of musicians, local musicians, music lovers. Maybe this is the place to stop it, because having something, what took the place of religion for me was having something else I truly evangelically believed in, which was rock and roll, music. The power of, I believe, of all the lively arts, music is the one that touches everybody in the most simple and beautiful way. And I have this belief, and that's what's allowed me to do something in this world.
Yeah, that's good.